This summer, I was with our young people at Passport, and they asked me, when are we going back to Riverdale? Now, when my grandchildren ask me to do something, I find a way to do it. And these wonderful young people are like my grandchildren, so here we go. We're going to Riverdale, that wonderful town where people care and life is usually fair. But I'll tell you, it's been a hot summer. Oh, goodness, it has been a hot summer. And everyone is waiting for fall to come. Everyone is waiting for those crystal clear, cloudless fall days. Waiting for the leaves to start falling. Waiting for the fall festival. Waiting for the pumpkins. Waiting for those crisp fall football Friday nights. Fall is coming because the fair is this week. And that is a sure sign that fall is at the doorstep. It's right around the corner. And the fair was the topic of conversation at Gower's Drugs earlier this week when Gertrude Shoemaker asked Maud, "You think you might enter your roses in the fair again this year?" Maud took a long, extended sip of her large glass of chocolate milk, that luxury that she never had as a child, before she answered, because the very thought of the fair and roses brought back painful memories. You remember the mystery of the missing Saint Francis? When Maud foolishly thought that she could upstage Gertrude Shoemaker, who every year, I mean every year, 17 years straight, has won the blue ribbon for her roses at the fair. Well, no one can match your roses, Gertrude. They might as well just go ahead and give you the blue ribbon before the fair even begins. Can you do that, Venom? You can? Might as well go ahead and do it. Oh, do I detect a little bit of jealousy? Gertrude asks. Well, Maud, what you ought to do is you ought to enter your pecan pie. It's a pecan pie, Maud said with an edge, knowing good and well that Gertrude knew how she pronounced it. This spirited conversation was interrupted by the jingling of the bell at the door, indicating that someone was coming in. And all eyes turned and saw a man in a wheelchair struggling to get inside the door, a man with a red soil bandana with tattered clothes. They all stood and they watched, and sadly, no one offered to help. The man rolled up to the counter. Now, you all know, because you have been to Gower's many times, it is an old drugstore. It is not handicap accessible. And so Dawn leaned way over the counter and asked the poor man what he wanted. Well, not even knowing what Gower's offered, he looked around and he spotted Maud's large glass of chocolate milk. "I'll have me one of those," he said. "That's chocolate milk." "Yeah, I'll have a glass of chocolate milk. I hadn't had one of those since I was a kid." "We don't offer chocolate milk," Dawn said. "We don't have any chocolate milk to sell." "What do you mean you don't have any chocolate milk? I'm looking at chocolate milk. Lady, aren't you drinking chocolate milk?" Well, Dawn said, "Well, let me explain. Chocolate milk is not on the menu. The only one who ever drinks chocolate milk is Maud, and so we order chocolate milk just for her." "What is this, some kind of exclusive club? Can only certain people have chocolate milk in this place? Are you discriminating against me because I'm in a wheelchair? Well, alarmed at his tone of voice and his obvious anger, Maud walks over and said, Sir, I'll be glad for you to have a glass of chocolate milk. Don't pour this man a large glass of chocolate milk. And sir, just because you're handicapped, don't think people look down on you. Maud, poor choice of words. Handicap, is that what I am? Why don't you just call me old Crip? Why don't you just call me wheelchair bound? Lady, do you know why people always look down on me? It's because I cannot stand up. I got my legs blown off in Afghanistan. That's why I can't stand up. I was over there fighting for your freedom. I was over there fighting for the freedom to go into a drugstore and order a glass of chocolate milk. But apparently I didn't fight hard enough. Apparently I didn't sacrifice enough. And with that, he wheeled around and leaving a few adjectives, colorful adjectives with the stunned patrons at Gower's, he rolled out the door. Wheelchair man. Maud was shaking. Something like that never happened at Gower's. Maud, of course, told Elmer, and well, within a couple of hours, the news was all over Riverdale. That night, Gertrude had her family over for supper, and she was telling them what happened. And her grandson said, oh, you're talking about wheelchair men. His name's Bobby. Yeah, we met him in Danville, Virginia when we went to Passport. Bobby lives in Riverdale now. Now, it seems the young people know all about wheelchair men. A couple of years ago, when the youth went to Danville, Virginia for Passport, one of the mission projects was an old building in downtown Danville that the city was renovating for low-income housing. They were asking the youth to clean out that old building. It was an old barbershop and a beauty shop side by side. But it was what was in the back of the building that was amazing. There was more junk than you can imagine. There was old furniture, broken furniture. They had used it just to dump anything and everything. There was all this old equipment from the barbershop and the beauty shop. There were old record players and books and calendars. There was just old appliances, just a little bit of everything. It was a disaster. It was a total wreck. Well, the first day that the youth were there cleaning out those buildings, wheelchair men came by, started talking to the old preacher. You know, the old preacher always goes with the youth to Passport. You just can't keep him away. Bless his heart. So wheelchair man asked what's going on, and he said, well, I'm here with my young people from Riverdale, and this is one of our mission projects. We're cleaning out this building. The next day, wheelchair man comes by again, and he said, preacher, I'm going to tell you something. I'm only going to tell you one time. I'm going to tell you. There was some shady stuff that went on in that building. And that was the afternoon that the young people discovered in the midst of all of that chaos and that junk and that debris, there was a bedroom. There was a bedroom with a bed that was perfectly made, and it looked like somebody had made up their bed, cleaned their room, and walked away, and it was waiting for them to come back. And it was the only thing that was in order. Everything else was chaotic. And then the next day, wheelchair man came back again. And he said, now, preacher, I'm going to tell you something.
I'm only going to tell you one time. I'm going to tell you something. There were people who walked in those doors who never walked out. And that's when we found it. That afternoon, we opened a desk drawer and they came pouring out. Dozens and dozens of driver's license and IDs. Now, young people, these other people here think I've made up a story. But this is the truth, isn't it? You tell them, you're on my side here. This is not a made-up story, folks. This is exactly what we found in Danville, Virginia. And there are all these people. There are all these names and addresses. They are Virginia driver's license. Well, last summer, we went back to Danville, and we met a new wheelchair man. This guy was in an apartment. Grayson, you were there. Luke, you remember the original wheelchair man, don't you? See, these guys know I'm telling the truth. We met a new wheelchair man, and the old preacher was talking to him, and he said, he said, you know, there was this guy that came by every day when we were cleaning out those buildings downtown, and the new wheelchair man said, yeah, that's Bobby. That's Bobby, yep. Good guy. Got his legs blown off in Afghanistan. Sad. Good guy. And now, here he is in Riverdale. So the preacher tried to talk to wheelchair man one day. Wheelchair man wouldn't have anything to do with him. And then he saw Sabo. And Sabo said, I talk to wheelchair man. I tell him you a good man. He'll talk to you next time. If you need anything done, you just contact Sabo. So the preacher was coming out of Clark and Harvey, had just purchased a few apples, and he saw wheelchair man under the old oak tree. So he walks over and he hands him an apple, said, you want an apple? Wheelchair man took a big bite out of it. They're good, honey crisp. And he said, I believe I know you. Isn't your name Bobby? Bobby, not my name. My name's Puddin'-Tang. Ask me again, I'll tell you the same. Oh, I'm sorry, the preacher said. We met a guy in Danville, Virginia a couple of years ago, and he sure did look a lot like you. We're mistaken. We were cleaning out some old buildings downtown, and we found a lot of odd things there. Wheelchair man said, you've got the wrong man. It's not me. And he left. There was a church having a barbecue chicken sale. So the preacher picked up an extra plate and went to wheelchair man's apartment. Now, when he walked in the door, the stench would just about knock you down. He went up and knocked on the door. Wheelchair man was there. He said, got a barbecue chicken plate. He walked in. He looked around. He had never seen such filth in all of his life. He put the plate on a little table, turned around, and as he was walking out the door, wheelchair man said, thank you. A few days later, he saw him again under the old oak tree. He went up and said, you got a few minutes? Do I look like I got a few minutes? That's all I got. Well, let me go into Gower's and get us a lime juice. Oh, they call it limeade. They have the best limeade in town. And about the time the preacher was about to walk in the door, wheelchair man said, I wouldn't order chocolate milk if I was you, preacher. It don't go over too good in there. He came back with two jumbo limeades. And he and wheelchair man sat down and talked. So, Puddin'-Tang, what should I call you? Just call me wheelchair man. It's what everybody else calls me.
Well, wheelchair man, we've got a wonderful group of young people in our church. And they always enjoy the opportunity to reach out and help somebody and make a difference. And they'd like to come over and clean up your apartment. Wheelchair man paused. Preacher thought he was a little choked up. And then he said, "Preacher, those are nice, decent kids. They've never seen anything as bad as my apartment. They don't need to come. To be honest with you, I'm ashamed of it." On Saturday, youth leaders, parents, young people showed up at Wheelchair Man's apartment. They were armed with buckets and mops and rags and bandanas and masks and gloves and cleaning supplies, and they went to work. And they cleaned that apartment from top to bottom. His bed sheets were so filthy, they just threw them away along with the pillow and went out and bought new ones. They realized all he had to eat on was two little plastic plates. They went and bought him a set of dishes and silverware. There was an old roach-infested sofa that had, it really had roaches in it. They picked that up, carried it out, put it in the dumpster, found a used sofa from somebody in the church and put it in his apartment. They hung pictures on the wall. And when the afternoon was over, his apartment was spick and span, and it looked like a brand new place. He thanked them, but he was rather stoic. But what they didn't see was when everyone had left, Wheelchair Man hung his head and he cried. A few days later, it was the big Riverdale Railroad Festival. Thousands of people come into town, and the young people, they charge for parking at the church. It's one of their main fundraisers. Well, guess who showed up? Sabo and Wheelchair Man. Wheelchair Man collected the money. Sabo would take his bicycle and guide people to the parking place. But while they were there that day, the young people started talking to Wheelchair Man. And he started telling them all these amazing stories about when he was their age, when he was growing up. He said, "You know, we had the best youth leader. Our youth leader, well, he used to scare us to death. He used to tell us ghost stories. One of the ghost stories he used to always try to tell us was there was a guy one night, he went to a dance, and he met this beautiful girl. Nobody knew who she was. And then she said, 'I need to go home.' He gave her a ride to her house. Well, she was cold, so he took off his sweater, you know, so she could put his sweater on. After he let her off at the house, he realized he didn't get his sweater. He said, 'Well, I'll go back the next day.' So the next day he goes back, he knocks on the door, this lady comes to the door, he said, 'Is Ann here?' The lady slams the door in his face. He finally gets her back and says, 'Look, I'm looking for Ann.' And she said, 'Is this some kind of cruel joke? Ann was killed in a car wreck 10 years ago last night.' He said, 'Ma'am, that's not true. I know it's not true.' She said, 'If you don't think it's true, go to the cemetery. You'll find her grave.' He went to the cemetery. He found her grave. And there was that sweater, neatly folded, on the grave. So he used to tell us this story. So one night, we're going to camp out on the anniversary of her death. We're going to camp out at the cemetery. We lasted until 9 o'clock. He said, that was the whole time we lasted. And then we went to his house. One of the girls said, 'A youth leader? So were you in youth group?' 'Yeah. I went on mission trips. We helped people out just like you came and helped me out the other day. And when I was a senior in high school, I was the youth preacher. I preached in my church.' And one of the youth said, 'When are you going to preach for us?'
It was a beautiful fall day, not a cloud in the sky. Elmer and Maud were on their way to church in the old green pickup truck, and it was heavy laden with casserole dishes and vegetables and all kinds of good food because a very special guest speaker, wheelchair man, was speaking in church, and they were having a covered dish after the service. "My name's Bobby," he said. "Most of you know me as wheelchair man." And he told about growing up in the church, about being so active and so faithful and singing in the youth choir and being the youth pastor, going on mission trips. And then he said, "After 9/11, I wanted to do something. So I volunteered. I joined the army. I went to Afghanistan. And there I met my best friend, best buddy I've ever had in my whole life. His name was Earl. He was from Danville, Virginia. His mom and dad ran a beauty shop and a barber shop side by side. Earl was a more dedicated Christian than I was. And we made a pact that we were going to keep each other faithful. We read the Bible every day. We prayed, we had devotions. When one of us got down, the other would lift us up. And then one day we were on patrol, and all I remember was a huge explosion. We hit an IED. I remember kind of waking up, and it seemed like my legs were just on fire. I'd never felt any pain like that. And all I remember was there was Earl. There was Earl right there beside me, and he kept telling me to hang on, that I was going to make it. And I remember him taking his belt off, and he used it as a tourniquet on my leg, and then he took something else. He was tying it around the other leg, and then that's all I remember. It was weeks before I woke up in a hospital in Germany, but I kept having a dream. I kept having this dream that I was back with my youth group, and we were camping out next to that cemetery. But we would look up, and on that grave would be an army coat and a helmet. And I would walk over, and I'd look at the tombstone, and it was my name. And then the next night, I would have the same dream. I'd have it over, but this time it'd be Earl's name. When I finally came to, I learned that Earl had died, that while he was trying to save my life, he was losing his. He was more concerned about me. He gave his life to save mine. And I just felt like I wanted to go to Danville, because that's where Earl was from. And I got there, but something bad had happened. His mom and dad were in some kind of trouble. And there were all these gang members and people that they owed a lot of money to. And they had kind of taken over the barber shop and the beauty shop. It was really just a front. There was all kind of mess going on in the back. But there was one thing that Earl's mother told them. "Don't you touch his room." His room was exactly like he walked out of it the day that he left. The bed was made. Everything was in perfect order. And they never touched his room. And then one day, I saw you and these young people. And I said, "That reminds me of the group I was with." And I went to Riverdale, where I didn't know if people cared about me or not. But just like Earl gave his life to save mine, we're here because Jesus gave his life to save my life and your life. And I haven't always been as faithful as I should be, but I am now. I'm starting over. Well, they had a wonderful, wonderful celebration down in the fellowship hall. In fact, the Wildcat Mountain Boys were there, and they were playing. It was just amazing. And all these ladies kept bringing Wheelchair Man all of this food, and Maud went back into the kitchen and poured him a large glass of chocolate milk and set it down right in front of him. Before he left, the preacher said, "Wheelchair Man, just got a question to ask you. You said there were people that walked in those doors that never came out. What did you mean by that?" He said, "Well, I didn't mean anything. They went out the back door. You didn't ask me which door." "Well, what about all these driver's license?" And Wheelchair Man said, "Preacher, there are some things you're better off not knowing." And that's the news from Riverdale, that wonderful, wonderful town where people care and life is usually fair.